My guest today is somebody that I know, which isn't always the case in the show. I'm really excited we're going to have a chance to have a conversation in front of you all. It's Michael Dietrich Chastain. Michael Dietrich Chastain, which is a mouthful, as I'm sure you've been told before. He's a best-selling author. He's a leadership expert. He's a professional speaker, and he is the CEO of ARC Integrated. It's a leadership development and organizational consulting firm based in the lovely state of North Carolina, specifically in Asheville. Michael, I'm so glad you're here. So glad we're making this happen. Welcome.
Good to be here with you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. We know each other. We're getting to know each other. We've spent a few hours together. So let's just have a conversation for the audience. I feel like you and I could probably have a 4-hour episode and we'd barely dig in, but we'll try and do it in about 50 minutes today. So Michael, first things first, what's something you nerd out about?
Oh, something I nerd out about. Well, I've got something new that I've been nerding out about recently.
Ooh, can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. So I just got back last week from a client trip to Chicago where we were delivering a leadership development training program inside virtual reality.
Ooh.
And so this whole space of using virtual reality as a learning platform,
yeah,
is fascinating to me. And I think it's a direction that is going to have all sorts of applications in the years to come, from, you know, from the learning arena to the therapeutic arena to the, you know, business development arena. I think it's going to have all sorts of applications, but yeah, it's an area I'm learning about and teaching about and nerding out about. So there you go.
Oh my God. I was picturing, as you said, virtual reality. You're doing leadership development and you have two people who don't like each other. You're like, you can go virtually fight each other without actually creating an HR issue.
So
that's really cool.
You know what's wild about that? So I didn't know this until last week. So there's a game that we were utilizing, which isn't really a game. It was designed by this company in the UK, and it's specifically for teaching leaders and teams about how to work in a peak performing way. And so it's designed with that in mind. But at my co-facilitator and I were in there doing like a tech check the day before, getting everything worked out. And we're in there, and you take on these avatars as you know, you can see each other inside the virtual reality. And so you can see each other waving hands and hands extended and all that. So in the VR, we reached out and we were trying to shake each other's hand. And our third facilitator is watching this and he's got a camera. What's crazy about this is as we were trying to reach each other in real space, we weren't facing each other. We were facing like in a line.
Oh, wow.
So it looked like, you know, I'm here and Bill, my partner's in front of me, and we're both just doing this.
Which that's so
from a design standpoint makes sense, right? Because it prevents people from clashing against each other, even though in the VR space, it seems like you're moving toward each other. You're not.
Oh, man.
Isn't that a trip?
I feel, all right. We're gonna scrap every question I'm gonna ask. We're gonna talk for 45 minutes about this specifically. We're not, but I would like to. Did you use Oculus? Like, what were you using as the hardware?
Yeah, the hardware was Oculus. Yep, and nice. There was a software inside of it that's designed for this, you know, question of leadership development.
Incredible leadership development in the metaverse. Maybe that's my new. My next podcast will be around metaverse and coaching and. Wow, that's so many questions for you, Michael, that I'm not going to ask you right now. We'll have a longer conversation about this some other time.
Sure.
Let's see. What's something that is inside of your comfort zone that you know is outside of somebody else's? And I'm just going to take it right off the table right now. Standing in front of a room, doing workshops, speaking in front of large audiences like you do. That's table stakes for what you do. So what's something else that you're really comfortable doing that you know other people are not?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but I've gotten this feedback from other colleagues and partners in the context of teaching. And certainly this is relevant to doing coaching work, doing therapy, which I did in my career years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's the ability to hold silence. So silence makes a lot of people really uncomfortable. And I'm oddly really good at it. So don't play the silent game with me.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you brought this thing up. If you would have talked to me about this 4 years ago, I would have been like, oh my God, that makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you know this about me. I'm a leader at a coach training program. And yesterday I was facilitating for about an hour and I asked a question. I sat there for almost 2 minutes. And
I said,
well, I actually don't care about it anymore. And I used to be in sales. So the kiss of death is actually talking too much.
Yep.
And so, and you know, it's like leadership development, but for new coaches. So similar, probably similar to some of the things you do, but we'll ask really confronting questions. And you can just watch the, and this is virtual and on Zoom. Yeah. Just watch people. Like, what do people automatically do? Some people won't look at the camera. Some people will stare blankly at the camera. Some people will like give you a weird little uncomfortable smile.
Yeah.
And I just sat there and finally somebody spoke up and I said at the end of this, and these are people we've known each other for 7 months now. We've spent a lot of time together. I said, for future reference, this entire leader team is not uncomfortable with silence. We'll sit here all day.
Yeah, like, there you go. There you go.
No, like, we'll sit here. I'm good, man. As a coach, I could sit here in silence all day. But
yeah,
I've met the Jason 4 years ago and been like, ooh, that's so uncomfortable. You got to fill the silence with something.
Yep. Yeah, it's a powerful tool, I think. And to your point, like it has application in a lot of places, right? Like you can use it in teaching and training and coaching and sales work. I love, you know, talking is the kiss of death. It sure is in the context of sales sometimes.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, for an external processors like myself, you want to give us some space and we will fill it. If I'm on the receiving end, if like you're my therapist or my coach and you say, hey, Jason, and you give me a prompt that requires me to think and process, just sit there and I'm going to give you more. I'm always going to give you more.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I like working with and connecting with folks like that. That, you know, it's because then it gives you material to riff on and to work with. And yeah. So, man, I got to ask you this question. It's a great question.
Like, please.
I like the nerding out question. I'm curious to hear how you would answer that. What's something that you're nerding out about?
My new nerd out. This is about a year. It's a little over a year now. And maybe this shows that I said this to somebody. I said, does this mean I'm officially middle age? I am obsessed with the Grateful Dead. And I never listened to the Grateful Dead or Dead, you know, now it's Dead and Company. John Mayer's the lead musician. There's Bob Weir, who was the original member of the band, two of the drummers. And so they recreated in 2015. I saw them live last summer and I really liked them. And I saw them again July 1st, both times at the original site of Woodstock. It's called Bethelwood Center for the Performing Arts, stunning outdoor venue.
Wow.
Since that time, I believe that I've listened to well over 100 hours of live Dead and Company music on an app called Nugs.net. So Nugs, if you're listening and you want to sponsor this episode, and it's kind of a problem, but in the best way possible. So now when I want to relax, I will either play guitar and play along or I will listen. And that's all, and I'm a big music accent. Like I have a very eclectic taste. I don't know that I've listened to anything else more than an hour besides Den Company in the since July 1st. I would say that makes me a nerd.
Yeah.
I would actually say that makes me a deadhead at this point.
That's cool. Yeah. I can appreciate it, man. There's definitely groups or musicians that I will dig into real, real deep.
Yeah.
We just saw a concert a few weeks ago. I bet you'd like this guy. His name is Daniel Champagne and he's solo. He's from Australia. But his guitar playing is really, really phenomenal.
That's cool.
And he does stylistically that like kind of like slap guitar. Yeah. So like
it's not Tommy Emmanuel, because Tommy Emmanuel is the master of that.
Correct. But stylistically that kind of
same genre. Yeah.
Yeah. You should check him out, man. Daniel.
I would love to.
Yeah. Daniel Champagne. Yeah.
Yeah. He might be like a Tommy Emmanuel, like disciple or something. Though I saw Tommy Emmanuel live in New York City a few years ago. It blew my mind. Like the way he takes an acoustic guitar and makes it more than just an acoustic guitar. It's the same thing, right? Like using the different sounds on it. Because you asked me, the other thing I will say is I was at Bethel on Saturday night. And I think if I haven't officially become a middle-aged person with music, I saw ZZ Top.
Yeah.
And Willie Nelson.
Yes.
And it was great. I'm like, these dudes are old, like, really old. Like, still sound great, played great, but they look old. Although ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons, you can't even tell. He still has the long beard with the sunglasses.
Yeah, I mean, they're in their 70s, right?
Yeah, ZZ Top. Well, Dusty Hill, the bassist, he died last year right before they went on tour. Billy Gibbons is 72. Willie Nelson, I'm like, yeah, he's in his 70s. He's 89 years old.
Wow. And he's still jamming.
He's still jamming. He looks 89, but he sounds good, and he plays his guitar Trigger that it's 1969. It's got a huge hole in it. It's like, it's really, but it was incredible to get a chance to go to that show. Willie Nelson's at the age where you're like, this very likely could be the last time, or maybe he'll live to 110. Maybe marijuana is the key to living a long time. Who knows?
There you go, man.
Really
fun. I love being around and witnessing people that are otherwise deemed like really, really old doing things that are like totally unexpected.
Yeah. Like, super unexpected.
It's such a great reminder that, you know, there's more possible than we tend to believe.
And also music is pretty timeless. I mean, yeah. Bob Weir, the Grateful Dead, is 74.
Yeah.
And he's out there rocking and rolling. He's the rhythm player for the Dead and has been for 53 years. And he still sings half the songs and does all that. Thanks for the question. Cool. I haven't had a chance to talk about this nerd on the episode. So when the people are either going to be really turned on or really turned off, because I feel like the Dead is either like, yeah, or what?
Yep. You're exactly right. It's a polarizing thing, I think.
Yeah. So Michael, going back to the, I feel like now I'm on the therapist chair. I feel like I need to take control back here. Like I'm fighting, you know,
I'm kidding.
No, I want to talk about something that is, you know, something's outside your comfort zone. Is somebody, you were a therapist in your previous life. You still, obviously that's still very applicable to what you do today. I call a lot of executive and leadership coaching business therapy.
Sure.
It's kind of a joke, but not really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was something you did before. Like you obviously done a lot of personal development work. You know a lot about the human mind, but so I'm really curious for you, what's something that is just outside your comfort zone? Something that you either don't like doing, you're unwilling to do, something that you know is something that other people really like to do.
Let's see, something that's outside. I'll give you a couple answers. One thing that comes to mind, cause I was just talking about this to someone today, is it's a business development thing actually. And, you know, me and this colleague and friend were talking about the idea of niching down and the value of it. And I have done so much study, Jason, and got my own coaching around, you know, developing my own business. And you and I are even connected in that way.
Yeah.
And one of the messages that's so very clear from all the experts out there is that the further down you niche, the faster you can scale, right? And even though that message has been given to me by so many people over the years since I've, you know, entered into entrepreneurial journey, which, you know, I started my business in 2015. So a number of years, for whatever reason, I like conceptually get it, but I hold this resistance around it that, you know, I continue to unpack. So for whatever reason, that's a area of discomfort. I don't know if it's like, if it's about the risk or if it's about like the willingness to say, you know, here's the very specific area that I'm working within. Yeah. So that's a area of discomfort that comes to mind, but you know, working on it.
Yeah. Very normal. Most people hate niching because they see it as a way that eliminates potential business.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way it does, but you know, through the community we're connected through Brand Builders Group, the truth of it is I won't use an example. I was having this conversation with somebody else. They're more of an implementation person. And we were working with him on what's his niche. And he had a few niches. And I said, but isn't most of your business referral anyway? He's like, yeah. So he's like, I want a niche because I want to become a thought leader in that space. I said, you can do that. Great. And do you think if you're a thought leader in health, like the healthcare, which is arguably the most complex organizational structures and legalities, do you think if somebody refers you to them and they look at your website and it says healthcare, that they're going to like automatically turn you out? It's unlikely, because the power of like the warm referrals, the power of, hey, Michael really specializes in this industry and he's good at these other things. Most of us our minds generally can put together the idea that Michael's good at a lot of things. So this is a good example, and you've heard this, is call it Sheehan's wall.
Yeah.
You bang away at the brick, you bang away at the brick. The brick is the thing you talk about. And then once you break through that, you talk about whatever the heck you want. So like Gary Vaynerchuk, Lewis Howes, Dave Ramsey, like Brene Brown. Like Brene Brown is at the point now where she could write a book on like how to grow the best plant you could grow, and people would like sign up for the course on that. 100%. And watch her Netflix special. She can talk about whatever she wants.
Yeah.
So it's, I just want to normalize that, because it's especially when you're a servant, like you want to serve people, you want to serve your community. It feels like, oh, I can't serve everybody I want to, but you can never serve everybody anyway.
Exactly.
And it also comes from, for most of us comes from a scarcity mindset, which most of us have, myself included. It's like, oh, yeah, like where's my next book piece of business coming from? And if I niche down, then that person may see my website and not do it. Right. Yep. But then the other flip side of that is somebody that's in your niche may see your website and be like, this is the person for me. And then that conversation becomes very easy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that. And there's been, I can see that clearly, like the direct relationship between my ability to like operationalize my abundance in my thinking and actions and my desire and creativity around niching down. And so, yeah,
no, ooh, absolutely. I think, man, I got to say it. You just hit, it's Instagrammable worthy. This may be book title worthy. Operationalize my abundance. I love that. That's amazing, Michael.
Yeah.
Like, wow, well, that's good.
I give you some examples of what I mean by that.
Yeah, please.
So like, I think a good example, I just did this recently, and I think it is an opportunity, like for any of us in business, is finding, you know, had a prospect call with a potential client, and it was really liked talking to them. I could definitely help them. And it was outside of the like direct area that I want to be working in. And I also know that there are other people in my network that would be really great fits for them. And so I referred them out to a couple other folks, knowing that, you know, I probably could have helped them, probably would have been, you know, enjoyable, but it wasn't like exactly where I want to be in. And so I think that's an example of like operationalizing abundance. Another example is, you know, we're in the midst of like building the team right now at Arc Integrated. And my commitment to them is paying. It's a, you know, we're doing like a contractual model, a subcontractor model. So, but my commitment to them is to pay them far beyond what typical day rates are for executive coaching and training and development work, which in that world, there's typical rates.
Yeah.
But my commitment is we're going to be paying them quite a bit more than that. So I think that's another like example of operationalizing abundance.
Love and that. Of course, yeah, you're doing it. I love that. It's like the tech model. And most of the good tech companies out there, they pay well above market rate because they understand that investment is, you get the best facilitators and coaches and such in the world to do that, which then allows you to go into these companies and create a phenomenal experience, which then allows you to get referred, and it's just, it all pays it forward. Very cool.
100%. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. So Michael, you're a speaker, speak on big stages, speak on small stages, speak on podcasts.
Yeah.
Like this one, for example, right now.
Right.
I give you 5 minutes. You could speak to us about anything you'd like to. What would you talk about, and what would you want us to walk away with and specifically do? What's your call to action?
So I'm working on this new I'm hesitating because I don't know if I should say this. It's a new idea I have for a book. Well, I'll tell you, I'm passionate about this idea. So book aside, I think it's a relevant topic.
Yeah.
So I think in the context of leadership development, which is the work that we're in right now, and in my firm, you know, we're always either doing one-on-one executive coaching or on helping leaders build skills like emotional intelligence, communication, conflict resolution, clarity of their culture, their mission, like all the things from a human standpoint, and we know create, you know, improved bottom lines. So that's the work that we're in. I think both at the company scale, the community scale, and maybe at the global scale, there is a skill set that I think the world needs right now. And it's the idea of holding paradox, meaning that so many problems that we see that leaders and organizations, and we certainly see evidence of this on the grand scale, can come down to the fact of the inability to hold two truths together. right? Me as a leader, right? If I'm, I can have an employee that is an outstanding performer and maybe they're super toxic for the organization. So we need to let them go. It doesn't mean they're not a good performer, right? The contrary is true, right? We're doing, our business is doing really, really well. And, you know, we've got a culture that needs a lot of attention. So we need to direct energy to that, right? An employee makes a big mistake and, you know, they're also really worth developing in, right? They're worth putting energy, time, money, and resources into. Not just they made a mistake, so we need to eliminate them, right? I think in so many ways, this idea of holding paradox can be helpful in decision making, and it can be helpful in conflict resolution. It can be helpful in creative thinking about what solutions are available to us. And certainly at the grand scale, at the global scale, you know, we see all this polarization of pick a topic, right? You've got these
anything,
you've got these extremes that are going, yeah. And so I think the answer to that is being able to hold paradox, right? It's being able to hold the fact that, yes, this person might have drastically different views than me around politics or, you know, economy or whatever, but I can still love them as a human. Yeah. You know, I can still appreciate their ideas. I can still navigate, you know, dialogue with them without seeing them as other or seeing them as the enemy. And that is the solution to that is the ability to hold multiple truths at the same time. So anyway, that's the topic that's been top of mind for me recently.
Great. When's the book coming out? I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. I heard and all that, do you have a pre-order link for us? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah,
no, that's great. Stay tuned. That's a great topic. It's something, the way we train that with coaches in the, is we call it a black or white context. It's a context most of us, myself included, like you're actually taught as a child. Things are good or bad. They're right or they're wrong. This is the right, you know, the education system teaches you that. This is the right way to do this. This is the wrong way to do this. And then we bring that. And then in business, for somebody, you know, like somebody who's worked, you have, you know, advanced degrees. Most of those are built on, this is the right way to do this. This is the wrong way to do this. So it's a very, it's just like a very normal thing, but I will share with you here before we go to the commercial break. That really resonates for me because I'm somebody who really grew up with a pretty black or white paradox. Like I was not somebody, and I was generally in my business career, not very good at holding a paradox. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, and also I'm somebody who's quite sure of themselves. So it'd be like, oh, once I landed on like, that's the thing, I was hard to knock off that box. And that's something that I've really worked on with my coach and through my development. And I got to tell you, I'm having a lot more fun now. You're like, oh yeah. Like it seems like it could be this, but like, what would the way we call this is, what's the gold? What's the gold? Hey, you're talking to somebody and you're like, I'm not aligned to this person at all. What's the gold in the conversation? What's the gold in their perspective? The gold sometimes might just be, I'm even more convinced of my stance now based on how they brought it up. But at least you're like open up to like something else being there. Super cool. Much needed. Do you speak on this? Do you have a speech written about this?
No, I don't. I mean, no, not all like fleshed out.
The answer is not yet. That's the correct. Yeah. That's the correct answer I was looking for. I was kidding.
Yeah.
No, that's great, Michael. Thanks for bringing all this so far. It's been really awesome. We're going to take a brief commercial break. We'll be right back.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
Michael, what do we know about you so far? We know that you, therapist, you run your own, you decided you were going to go be crazy and go start your own thing instead of like riding off into the sunset with a career that's was probably quite fulfilling and quite, you know, like a career that like, there's always going to be people that need what you do.
Yeah,
it's never going away.
Absolutely.
And you founded your own company. You do work with corporations and businesses. You know, you're an author. So Michael, what else do you want us to know about you?
Yeah. Well, I've got an idea related to what we were just talking about, both in the context of VR, which we were talking about earlier, as well as Holding Paradox. And so
this idea
I'm about to share has been something I've been noodling on for the last year. And so we've been in this space of learning and developing programming around virtual reality to take to leaders to help improve leadership and culture, workplace culture and team performance. And I see that as a kind of a bleeding edge of like technology and innovation and learning styles. And I love that. Like, I'm someone that embraces change and embraces innovation and embraces newness in tech. It's fascinating to me. And part of that is based on the fact that we're in this rapid time of change and that that's just going to accelerate in the years to come. So I think it only is a benefit to us to understand how things are changing, right? As teachers and as learners. And at the same time, at Arc Integrated, we're also working on a retreat concept that is the opposite of that. And so while I hold this belief of innovation and tech and changing and how we learn and grow as humans, I also believe that ancient wisdom and tradition can teach us just as much. And so things like, you know, meditation and connection to nature and martial arts practices and, you know, many other kinds of traditions that have been in human existence for a long time and can tell us things about, you know, how we can grow and improve. And so this retreat that we're working on is going to be kind of the opposite of the bleeding edge tech.
Yeah.
It's going to be a retreat and in Costa Rica. It's happening next year in April. And it's going to be much about, you know, creating a forum of leaders that will go through experiences in nature and experiences in movement and experiences in meditation, all with the same outcome in mind, which is how do we get better and how do we create, you know, peak performing conditions within our organizations through understanding Amazing. Ourselves at a higher level.
Wow. That sounds very cool.
Yeah.
And Costa Rica. It's a good spot.
Yeah. Coast. Have you been?
No, but I have a friend who moved down there during the pandemic and is still there. And I have I live in the similar space you do. I have a lot of friends who run like ayahuasca and medicinal journeys in Costa Rica. And one of them, I don't think they're part owner of a retreat center. So yeah, like I've just heard nothing but good things about Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be the place that a lot of people go to do this sort of work. And it's a great place. And it sounds like it's got this great combination. It's also not that hard to get to from the United States, which makes it really useful.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think it's relatively easy. And, it's one of the few blue zones in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it's going to be wonderful. I'm really, really excited about it. So yeah. So when you ask the question about like what else people might like to know, I think that idea of the combination of what can we learn about the innovations and changing of our modern world while combining the lessons and wisdom of ancient tradition is an area that I like to kind of hold that paradox.
That's cool. That's very cool. I'm the same way. Believe in a lot of like this old things, you probably know this about me. I'm a big technology person. I spent 20 years working in technology sales. I love technology. I'm an early adopter and I'm bunch of stuff, which is an expensive hobby, habit,
but sure is.
But it's a lot of fun too. So Michael, let me turn the reins over to you. Let me get out my box of Kleenex. Let me lay down on the couch here. No, we're not doing therapy. We're just doing a podcast. What would you like to ask me?
I'd love to ask you a question.
Yeah. What would you like to ask me that I can answer for everybody listening?
I'd love to do it at random. Are you up for some totally random questions?
You're talking to the right person, my friend. Yeah. I'm totally up. I love that. By the way, for anybody listening, I never know what my guests are going to ask me. These are never pre-planned. I have no idea what's coming.
Yeah. So I actually don't know either. So I'm going to use this card deck.
Are you using your cards?
Yeah.
We're going to tell the audience listening what you're about. Actually, would you tell the audience what you're about to do? Cause I have these, you sent them to me and they're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we use these cards. It's a deck of of 49 questions. I don't know. There we go. Autofocus. They're changes cards, right? So there's 49 questions, and here's one that might be relevant for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would you like to or spend? Is that coming through, Jason?
You see that? Okay. What would you like to change about where you spend your time online? You want to do some rapid fire change questions?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's so what I'm going to do is shuffle these up.
And I'm going to also I'm going to work on my bottom lining skills. I'm going to answer them very succinctly.
Yeah. So I'm going to pull them at random and to give you a sense, like the way we use these. So like recently I was speaking at a conference in Chicago a couple months ago, and we did an entire conference session where at the beginning of the conference, this is with, I don't know, 200 plus people. We facilitated what we call a question swap. Everybody has a card. They're shuffling around the room. We teach them how to do it first. They have the card. They find a buddy. They ask the question. They answer the question. They swap cards. Now I have a new card. Amazing. And I raise my hand and I go find another person. And what it does is it inserts a ton of energy into the room, into the conference. It gives people a deep connection with one another in rapid time. And then they've got a tool that they can use to connect with each other for the rest of the conference. We've done this a bunch of times. Amazing. And it's always a massive hit. Might imagine, like someone that, you know, I know you help design large experiences and you certainly attended many conferences. Like,
oh yeah.
So you know the importance of creating community.
Yeah.
And this is a tool for that. And so that's one of the applications. We also use them a ton with executive teams, trying to break down barriers, trying to think more creatively about how to solve problems as a team.
Yeah.
And then we use them in one-on-one conversations. And so not typically on podcasts. This is kind of special.
We're going to model this live, and I have no idea what questions go. This is, I mean, you're speaking my language, Michael. This is like my favorite thing to do is let's improv some stuff. Let's get after it. This is great. I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know what this question is going to be, but here it is. Let's see. What's that one say?
It is, what's one thing you'd like to change about your home or work environment? Oh, that's an easy one. Yeah. I would like less children's toys on the floor when I get home from work.
All right. All right. How about this one? This is going to be a little harder. I don't know what it is, but I know this category is harder.
What is a fear you have and how might you replace it with a different belief? I have a fear that I'll never be in as good a shape as I know I could be based on my current habits. And the different belief would be that I'm actually quite healthy or I'm good enough.
Love it. Love it. All right. One more rapid fire.
Do it. Who do you know that is very courageous and why? Man, I know a lot of courageous people.
Yeah.
I'm going to call out somebody that I know. Her name is Allison Daniels, and she is somebody that I got to know last week. She is in oncology. She spent a lot of time she's an oncology nurse. She has done a lot of hospice work and a lot of palliative work. So she has seen a lot of people transitioning to the next thing.
Wow.
out of their life. In other words, she's seen a lot of people die, and she was sharing in the environment I was in, she was sharing some stories about how a lot of the things that she's seen are preventable. And it's a message that is a little dissonant for some people. And I want to acknowledge her and say she's very courageous, because saying that to her audience is very confronting for people, that this could have been prevented. I'll just be very clear what she said. She said, I've seen a lot of people die not well. Like the end of their life was not pleasant for them, for their families. It did not go well. And even if you're going to pass, like we all are, there's ways to make that experience better for everybody. Even when you are sick, even when you do have cancer, there are some things you can do. So I think she's really courageous for going out and being willing to say that, because that's a very confronting topic.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't know if she listens, but if you do, Allison, awesome work. Thanks for doing what you do. Yeah. That's if she listens to this, man, I hope she gets to hear that.
I feel like I need to talk to the owner of Arc Integrated about sponsoring this podcast and have the changes card section every episode. This is fun. I'm being mostly kidding, but truth and comedy. Would you like to sponsor the podcast going forward? No, that's really fun. I might start to throw that in with some of my guests. Is I'm going to pull up a random question. I want you to answer it just to spice it up. I always like to be, oh, it's cool. Very cool. So for everybody listening, again, we'll put the link in the show notes. That was, they're really cool. They're little circles, they're yellow circles. And all Michael did there is he pulled one out randomly. You didn't even look at it. You held it up to the camera and I read it and then answered it for you. That would I know not everybody likes that sort of thing, but I love that sort of stuff. So thank you for bringing that. Thank you for doing that. Very cool,
Michael. Thanks for being willing to take a risk. Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah. Michael, what's the thing you're most proud of?
What's the thing I'm most proud of? Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I always struggle with questions like that. And, you know, when asked questions like, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite thing? I don't know. Maybe it's my fear of commitment.
Yeah. What's the paradox at play in real time right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm proud of that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to a client about this. We're getting ready to go to Michigan to facilitate a multi-day program for some leaders at a company up there. And I designed a program that is the intersection between emotional intelligence development as a leader and development of coaching skills as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that intersection is you know, maybe intuitive for some people, but I think very unique for a lot of folks. Like drawing the lines of connection between the two is a unique approach. And so I think when it comes to designing content and models and you know, teaching methods, I feel confident and proud of, you know, some of the things I've designed, and that's one of the programs that comes to mind.
Yeah, I love that. I know you work with a lot of really impactful mission-driven companies, and I'm just really present to the fact that all of us out here who buy those products or services, part of the reason they're so well done is likely could be because, well, not could be, it's possible that your team has had a hand in that work, like how to make the cultures better. Very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. There's always a team, right? There's always a team behind the scenes. And, thanks for the question. What about you, man? What are you proud of?
My
or,
family.
Or most proud of, if you can My answer family. That difficult question.
My family.
Okay, there you go.
It's the answer that every single guest, I think your guest, like 137 on this show, and then I have another tech show. I don't ask it on the tech show, but every single person who has children will say their family. I've never heard anybody who I know has a family say that. So it's also a good indicator for the listeners to know whether somebody has a family or not.
Yeah. That's fair. I don't have children yet.
See, so and I didn't, yeah, fair. I did know that about you, but,
fair.
Just, I mean, at the end of the day, for those who have children, like that's what actually matters, and seeing them, and we have young kids, but even seeing our 6-year-old, she's like a little human with a lot of insights and opinions, and sometimes they're annoying, but she's very astute and like really brings up a lot of really cool things. So that's the thing I'm most proud of. I think outside of the, you know, the family, definitely the business that I've built.
Mm.
I have a really unique business where I do a number of different things. You know, we met through one of the ways I do things, but most people go like, what do you do? And I'm like, well, today I'm doing this and tomorrow I'm doing that, but it all actually flows together really well. And if you were to take a look at the disparate things I do, you might say that like how, but the way I've put it together, just it really works for me really well. And the output of that is likely that it works pretty well for most of the people, not everybody, but most of the people I work with, it works well for. It's interesting. Uh-huh. You know, this, like I do brand strategy work. Last week I was in Nashville doing brand strategy work. Tomorrow I'm meeting with 3 founders to coach them one-on-one, like each of them one-on-one about, you know, like whatever we're going to, I don't even know what we're going to coach about. Right. Like coaching was one of the fun things is you don't know what they're going to show up with. We don't pre-plan it.
Today.
I'm recording 3 podcast episodes.
Oh, cool.
Thursday, I'm doing something completely different than those 2 things. So just, I'm really proud of leaning into who I want to be in the world and like finding the ways to do that, whether it be doing work for others, working for myself. And that's the thing I'm most proud of now.
I love it. I love it, man. Yeah. I think that's one of the most rewarding things about the entrepreneurial journey, right? Is that it kind of ebbs and flows on our shoulders, right? Like we are allowed to create such, you know, such complexity in our schedules and such simplicity in our schedules. And it's all, there's so much autonomy.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, can I ask you one other follow-up question?
No. Yes.
Since this might be a question you could ask the future guests too about, since everybody says family about the most proud. So regarding you said your one daughter, is that right?
I have a daughter and a 6-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son.
Okay. Almost so for the 6-year-old, since she's, you know, a little more developed, what is one thing that you are so surprised by when you think about, you know, watching her grow up?
Yeah. Background, she goes to a Montessori school.
Oh, cool. That's great. I love that.
Yeah. Her ability to create things. She's very artistic, which is fun. My wife's artistic. I'm only artistic in some musician ways, but not in like markers and all those things. That's the first thing that comes to mind. But now that I say it, the thing that I'm actually most blown away is her proficiency with the English language.
That's cool.
She really knows how to phrase quite complex things. And it's happened over the last year. And I think it's partially my wife and I are both communicators for a living. So she's probably got some of that DNA. But also the quality of education she received over the last year, just I can have conversations with her and it's almost like I'm talking to an adult. It's actually a better conversation than with some adults. Like she's really quite good at expressing things intellectually and emotionally. Of course, she's a 6-year-old, so there's a lot of emotions, but it's really fun.
That's really cool.
I love having conversations with her. Like she can tell me why she likes something and she'll tell me why she does or does not like something in a way to adult with it. Not because I like the colors. It's like, I don't like this show, blah, blah, blah. Or I really like this magazine because, and she'll list out a list of things. I'm like, you've actually thought about this and this makes sense. Well, although she probably didn't really think about it, but yeah, it's super fun.
What a great answer. And I mean, I'm going to guess at least some of that sophistication has to do with her wonderful parents.
Maybe. it's all her now. What I'm uncomfortable with is taking any sort of compliments. It's definitely all her mother. We tried. She's a great kid. We try to do a good job. My wife's amazing. Well, thank you. Awesome. Cool question. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. That's super cool.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
How do you see the world? As a paradox, it's black or white. That'd be an amazing answer.
Right now I'm looking at some mountains and some trees and I got this beautiful bay window in front of me.
Oh, I like the literal answer here. How do you see the world? I see it through my eyes.
Yeah, I see it through my eyes. How do I see the world? That's an open question. I see it as opportunity. I see it as, pain. And I was just talking to somebody recently about the nature of suffering and how there's so much opportunity in that, another paradox, right?
Yeah.
The more we can lean into suffering, the more opportunity, lessons, growth there is in that. Yeah. So, I don't see the world as all puppy dogs and rainbows. But I do see it as opportunity. And I see a lot of that comes from the hard stuff.
Yeah.
The hard stuff. And so I see it that way. I see it as evolving. Mm-hmm. I think, and particularly right now, we're in this bizarre time in human history where a lot of the experiences that human beings are having are unlike, all the humans before us, thousands of years in the making. And so I think we're in this bizarre time. And, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of chaos and disorder and awful things that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I'd like to believe that our perspective on those things, is what can help pull us out of those things. Mm. Meaning that, if we only see the darkness, then that oddly perpetuates things, right? But if we see the darkness and we're able to see all the good in the world and all the opportunity and our influence on it, I think that will take us in a different direction. And it does. It feels like we're at this crossroads.
I'm certainly not
unique in that opinion.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to see all the goodness. And it's hard, right? It's hard to pull that out because I think a lot of what we're shown over the course of news and social media and advertisement and all this is like the the darkness, you know, the things that are going wrong, the things that we need to aid our suffering, the, you know, the awful events that are happening. Like, but that's like a slice of the pie. There's a lot more pie.
Yeah. Our friend Rory Vaden, I know, you know, I know, I think it was him. He had this thing that just really blew me away. We were talking about journalism and media, and he said, they're not in the information and education business. They're in the attention business.
100%.
Attention business.
Yep.
Fluff stories, what's gone right today.
Yeah.
Those things don't sell. Nobody tunes in for those, unfortunately. We tune in for the, and whatever, and I'm talking about social media too. Like it's not that interesting. I mean, it should be more interesting. It's interesting to some people, but overall it doesn't sell, which is a real bummer. Real bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I don't see news channels as platforms of truth finding.
Well, maybe InfoWars, but maybe Alex Jones, Mr. might be going out of business, hopefully going out of business, not to get too political. Oh man. That's a whole different episode.
Yeah. Right. How about you? When you think about the world, what comes to mind for you?
Anything I actually different? See it as a very, I like the facilitator coach conversation we're having.
Yeah, it was okay. I keep going back.
No, it's great. I love it.
I'm just curious about it, you know, like, I'm curious about your perspective.
Yeah. I see the world as filled with possibilities for most people, not all. Well, I believe there's possibility for everybody. I believe the gradient for some people is much harder. Bordering on, you really got to have something change either inside of you or external factors.
Yeah. Privilege is absolutely real, right?
Yeah. I mean, let's be clear. You 100%. And I both work in industries that are luxury items. You know, coaching, leadership.
We could debate that, but yeah. But
luxury items in that you have to generate enough money to hire a coach privately, or you want to work on brand strategy, or you want to run a podcast, or you want to bring in leader. Companies that are about to go out of business don't generally spend a ton of money on training and leadership development. They spend it on, like, how do we keep the doors open? Or they don't spend it. Like, they tighten their belts, right? Like, that's what I mean by that. But I generally see the world as, for most people, possibility. I see the world as a place that I think most people are good. Most people are good. And one thing that's been a big breakthrough for me in my personal development work is relating to people as doing the best with the tools they have.
Yeah, I love it.
And I don't know if that's something as a, you know, as a trained therapist that comes up, but when you expect everybody to have the same level, one, not everybody thinks the same as you. That's a big breakthrough to have, is like, oh, your opinion is not the only opinion. Yeah. Two, and this goes to the paradox thing. And two, that a lot of people, most people are only operating with the tools they've been given most of the time. And some people have been given a lot of tools that don't use them. Some people have been given the tools and weaponized them. Mm-hmm. Give you an example. Like, I think Putin's somebody who's a brilliant human person who's figured out how to use it for evil and manipulation.
Sure.
Hitler was the same way.
He's absolutely
brilliant at getting people to believe things. And then I do believe that when you relate to people as most of the time having best intentions, it's easier to actually meet in the middle and remove those paradoxes.
Yeah.
But not always. Some people you cannot work with. Some people just are unwilling, and that's okay. But I also feel a little sorry for them sometimes, because there's just a lot more possibility. And I'm somebody who lived that, and I was never like dead set in my ways, but I've definitely moved to the, oh, what's this fun gray area we get to play in here?
Yeah.
What's outside of the way this has to go that could be really unique and fun?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And it's such a more helpful place to start, right? When we assume, you know, people are doing their best and they have good intentions and they're working within the constructs and tools that they have, like, an easier place to begin from.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I appreciate what you're saying.
Nice. So Michael, let's wrap here. Let's talk a little bit about ARC Integrated, changes, the book. Sure. We'll put all this information in the show notes as well. People can download it. I have the book. I have the cards. It's super cool stuff. How can people connect with you and connect with the team?
Sure. Yeah. Check out our website. There's a ton of information on that. It's arcintegrated.com. And we do a lot of writing on all things leadership development, workplace culture, team performance. So our blog's pretty active. Lot on social media. You can find me, you know, my obnoxiously long name on all the platforms.
Obnoxiously long name.
Yeah, you can find that pretty easily.
That's
and then
great.
Arc Integrated as well on all the platforms. And yeah, if any of this resonated with folks, always happy to connect for a, you know, for a chat. If there are, you know, leaders that are listening and are curious, like how do we create really healthy, profitable cultures within our company? How do you develop, you know, leaders or junior leaders? Always happy to dialogue about that.
Yeah, let's do it. Also, perhaps in the very near future, meet on VR.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do my first podcast episode via VR where we're sitting in a studio. I don't think that's too far away at all.
It's got to be out there.
Jason,
it's coming way faster than people think.
Yeah. It'll be sooner than later. This show will move. The challenge with that is a remote podcast. We both, like, if you and I both have an Oculus, which my wife works at Meta, so getting an Oculus is not a hard thing for me to do.
Go.
And if you got one too, that would be, hey, let's do this podcast on VR. The challenge is we both have to have the technology and have it working.
Yeah.
It just creates a whole new layer of thing. But like for somebody like, we'll have you back. We should actually do that sometime because we have an Oculus.
Yeah.
If you have one too, like I think for people that have it working, it would be great. For people that don't yet have it working, it'd be a logistical nightmare.
Well, the cool thing, and we could obviously talk further about this, but like during our session I mentioned and with this client, you know, we had the people in VR, and then for folks that happen to be outside of the gaming component,
yeah,
we were projecting what the players were doing onto a big screen. So you could see even if you were outside of it, what was happening in real time. So for instance, I say that because if you were to do a podcast in VR, you and I could be inside it and it could be projected to a screen that's recording, and then that's the recording that lives wherever, YouTube.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
I think we've just figured something out we are going to do, and it's not going to be before long before we do this. There's got to be a way to do this.
You and I are
like the perfect people to actually do this. So I love technology. I'm good with technology. You're good with it. You've already done this in a thing. All right.
Yeah.
Tune in soon for the first VR podcast episode with Michael Dietrich Chastain and Jason Purcell.
Love it.
Yeah. Nice, Michael. Well, so good. We finally got a chance to make this happen. We've known each other a few months. It's been a real pleasure having you on. Really appreciate the questions you gave me. And I love the improv around the changes cards. That was really fun. I think that's going to be something that you're going to hear more of on the show.
Awesome.
And now leave us with some last short and sweet words of wisdom you want everybody to walk away with.
Yeah. So I think what I would say to circle back to leadership development, you know, there's often some confusion around what it is and what it isn't. And you know, the reality is that there's been so much, you know, so many decades of research about what an effective team looks like, what effective leadership looks like, how do you create a workplace culture that's engaged and excited and really profitable? Like all of that is very clear. There's not a mystery around how to do this.
No.
So it's simple. It's just not easy. And so my encouragement is for any folks that are leaders out there, or even working at a company at a level in which you're not leading, there are really good ways to create highly engaged and profitable cultures. It's not a mystery. And so my encouragement is, you know, reach out if you'd like to talk. And there's a ton. I encourage people to look at the research.
Yeah.
Encourage people to look at the research. Study, you know, people that, you know, like conscious leadership, for instance, or, conscious business, you know, study these things, study people like Brené Brown, who has awesome literature on, you know, vulnerability and shame and guilt. Study, you know, people like Dr. Amy Edmondson out of Harvard, who is the, you know, front runner in the term psychological safety, which we know is the number one predictor of effective team performance across, you know, geography or, you know, size of company. So, yeah, encourage people to read up on it and to connect if they'd like.
Yeah. Michael, thank you so much for being on. Keep doing what you're doing over there. Best wishes to you and the rest of the team. And can't wait to have you back on and be doing this in virtual reality sooner than later. We'll be sitting in a virtual studio sooner than later.
Awesome. Love it. Yeah. Thank you, Jason. It was a pleasure to connect, man.
Thanks, Michael.
Look forward to seeing you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out, or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.